You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're broadcasting today from the WPR studios in Milwaukee. Coming up, we'll meet a 15-year-old Milwaukee musician who just won a Rising Star Award from the Wisconsin area music industry.
First, we travel back in time to visit Milwaukee in the 1930s. A federal writers' project told the story of the neighborhoods and landmarks of Milwaukee in the midst of the Great Depression, the New Deal, and on the eve of World War II.
First commissioned in 1935, the guidebook painted a picture of daily life in Wisconsin's largest city, complete with suggested automobile tours of the area, but it was never published until this month.
John Bunker joins us now. He's professor emeritus of history at UW Parkside and editor of Milwaukee in the 1930s, a Federal Writers Project city guide. John, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, John, can you tell us the story a little bit behind the city guide? How did it first get started?
Well, I had it all started with a very good friend of mine, Zane Miller, who was founder of the Urban History Association. He was trying to locate a bunch of city guides that apparently the Federal Writers Project had done, and many of them were published and some not. And among the ones that weren't published were Milwaukee. And then he contacted a friend of his, Stan Schultz, who's an emeritus professor at Madison, who checked out and found out that we had this manuscript in the archives at the State Historical Society. So that's what kind of got the ball rolling.
As a historian, how exciting is it to find this document that paints such a picture of life 70, 80 years ago?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, of course, from at my age, it's a little less remote than you might think. I mean, I was actually born in 1937, so I'm kind of at the tail end of the 1930s.
So as you explored this manuscript, can you tell us about the kinds of things that are in it, what you found out?
Pardon me?
Can you tell us about the kinds of things that are in this book? What kind of picture do we get?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Oh, wondering if you could describe what's in the book.
Oh, what's in the book? I'm sorry. Yeah, well, it has several parts to it. The first part is the neighborhoods, which they identified three neighborhoods, beginning from the Celia Center down to Bayview, and so that there's a description of each one of those neighborhoods as it existed in the late 1930s. And then the other part is a simulated auto tour around Milwaukee, which starts at the Civic Center and goes to the north and south and west all the way to the city limits.
How had Prohibition, John, we're just coming out of Prohibition there in the mid-1930s. How had that changed Milwaukee?
Well, this was the era of the Great Depression, actually. Prohibition was over pretty much by this point. Although there is some mention of it in the things that people, they see, people wrote these things as part of this Federal Writers Project, which was actually a project to give work and income to a lot of unemployed people during the depths of the Great Depression. And, you know, we think a lot about people who worked for the WPA and worked on roads and hot walls and things like that, but they also hired a whole bunch of people who were writers. And one of the things they did was to write guides for each of the states, and then they started doing it on the cities, but they never got finished with that because the war intervened, and that was the end of it. But
and John, who were some of the writers?
Well, as far as the ones who wrote, the people in who wrote the Milwaukee volume, there, I really haven't been able to find out anything about the people who did the writing. I mean, they didn't leave any records. It's just the manuscript, and I checked many times. I couldn't find anything. So, they're kind of anonymous, I guess you'd have to say. Mm-hmm. They were probably newspaper men, teachers, people who were out of work and were able to do this in order to earn income.
What was the ethnic makeup of Milwaukee in the 1930s?
Pardon me?
What was the ethnic makeup of Milwaukee in the 1930s?
Well, I think just simply that, they were trying to do all the major cities in the country. They did produce ones for New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, San Francisco, et cetera, and then some from some smaller towns, including Key West, Florida. So it just so happened that they made this available to the local governments, in this case the city council, and they decided that they would go ahead and sponsor this thing, and they they voted enough money to actually take care of hiring the people who were doing the writing and producing the volume and so on.
We're talking with John Bunker right now, Professor Emeritus of History at UW Parkside and editor of the book Milwaukee in the 1930s, a Federal Writers Project City Guide. And John, in this book, what was the biggest surprise to you about Milwaukee?
I think that the fact that probably that it never got published in the first place. I mean, one of the things that was going on in Milwaukee at this time was it was a very contentious period in the 1930s because of the Depression and also because there was a big political blow-up, which ended up with Mayor Dan Hoehn finally being losing an election after being in office for like 26 years. So it was a pretty unstable kind of a period. But, you know, Milwaukee wanted to be considered along with all the great cities, obviously.
How much would downtown Milwaukee look different to us now? How much has changed about downtown Milwaukee between the 1930s and today?
Well, yeah, I mean, for one thing, the size of the buildings, they had an ordinance in those days that you couldn't have building couldn't have more than 14 stories, I believe, or something like that. So that would certainly be one of the differences that you would notice immediately if you could project yourself back in time. And of course, it was really what urban historians call a walking city. I mean, we had some public transportation. Of course, by this time, most people had automobiles, but you could actually walk around the downtown area in about an hour. You could reach the city limits from any spot in the Civic Center, for example, out to either the north limits or the south limits or the west limits. Not the east limits, obviously, but because you'd be right in the middle of the lake. But it just gives you the feeling of being able to go right through and be there and drive through it and see what you can see and see what was there then and which things are still around and which things have been displaced or torn down.
And what about the lakefront, one of Milwaukee's most striking features? There's Lake Michigan sprawling right at its doorstep. What did that area look like compared to now?
Well, the lakefront, of course, was being developed at that particular point, the water treatment plant and some of those. And it's right, the 13 neighborhoods, the first one, is right smack downtown Milwaukee, right on the lakefront. And then they sort of branch out from there. For example, the farthest one on the south side would be Bayview, which was actually operating at that point. It had been a separate city at one point, but had been incorporated by then. And the other one was going up the what we would call today the Lakeshore Drive, I guess, and they had begun to open up all of those beaches for public use, and so that was certainly something that made Milwaukee very intriguing to a lot of people.
John, thank you so much for joining us and telling us about it today.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
That was John Bunker, Professor Emeritus of History at UW Parkside. He's the editor of the newly published Milwaukee in the 1930s, a Federal Writers Project City Guide.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're broadcasting today from the WPR studios in Milwaukee. Coming up, a Latino civil rights organization called for a federal probe into a popular custard stand in Milwaukee. The call for investigation comes after reports that employees were told to speak exclusively in English with customers, which the group says violates labor laws.
Right now, Wisconsin can claim a lot of great musicians through the years, including names like Woody Herman, Al Jarreau, Les Paul, Steve Miller, and a whole lot more. Our next guest may be joining those ranks in the future.
Jonah Roth is a ninth grader at the Milwaukee Public High School of the Arts. He won the Rising Star Award from the Wisconsin Area Music Industry last month, and he's joining us now in the studio. Jonah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, how does it feel to win this Rising Star Award when you're only in ninth grade?
Well, I mean, it was really unexpected for me. Like, I have a lot of people to thank over the years because, I wouldn't have been able to done it with, like, my band members and my guitar teachers and all my teachers at school. And, you know, it's just, I just had, my family has supported me, so I just can't be more grateful for all those people.
Well, I imagine all those people had something to do with how you got into music in the first place. How did you get your start?
I was just sort of always a huge fan of music. My dad had a lot of blues records, and that's sort of what I got into when I was younger, and I just always wanted to be like a guitarist. I started taking piano lessons when I was younger. I still play some piano as well. And I just always wanted to be like Jimi Hendrix or something. But then I just sort of eventually figured out my own style. I was playing, just like sitting in front of YouTube trying to play guitar to all these videos. And
so you watched how-to tutorials on YouTube to learn to play?
No, I eventually took guitar lessons, but I started out by spending hours trying to play along to...
Oh, your favorite stuff.
Yeah.
Nice. And do you still like the blues?
Yeah, I still love the blues, but I've really branched out into a lot of other genres, which is different kinds of rock. I'm in like an alternative band where we do original music.
Uh-huh. So alternative rock, and is that your main genre now? Is that where you...
I don't really know where I stand in terms of main genre, but I kind of just play whatever I can play to express myself.
And you're here in the studio with a guitar. You brought a guitar, so we know you play that. We talked about that. What else do you play, or what about your singing?
I sing, and I write music a lot, and I play piano. I take piano lessons like every other week right now. I do a little bit of drums and just a little bit of just, you know.
Well, I know that at this point I'm already dying to hear you play something, and you brought your guitar. So would you be able to play something for us?
Yeah, sure.
Great. Maybe it's just something short, and we'll have you, if you can, maybe just sit in your chair there, and we'll see what we can pick up on the mic.
Okay.
A live performance here in the Milwaukee studios on Central Time.
Okay.
And this is Jonah Roth. Thank you so much for sharing that. That was great. Tell us a little bit about what we just heard. What was that?
That's sort of just this jam I've been working on for a while.
So you wrote that?
Yeah, I wrote that.
But does it have a name?
I called it All People's Shindig. It's sort of just a work in progress, you know. I've been trying to cooperate it with members of my band, try to figure something out.
We're speaking right now with Jonah Roth, ninth grade student at Milwaukee Public Schools, Milwaukee High School of the Arts, and he won the Rising Star Award from the Wisconsin Area Music Industry last month, and he just played a song for us on his guitar. It's called All People Shindig. And Jonah, you're a freshman in an arts high school here in Milwaukee. What has that been like, and has that helped along your music?
Well, I feel like the fact that it's an arts high school, like all the kids have a major, like, creative writing, dance, visual art, theater, music, and everyone, all the teachers who work there also have to be some kind of artist. So it's a big family of artists working together to expand our minds and sort of use our creativity to prepare us for the rest of our lives.
Sounds really supportive. So do the different disciplines that you just described, do they bounce off each other and create new ideas?
Yeah, I think so. Like, in,
different things, dance and that. And I know you're in a lot of bands, so it must be a great place to meet band members. Tell us about some of the different groups that you play with.
Yeah, I played for a long time with a band called The Magi, and we played at, like, Chill on the Hill at Humboldt Park, performed on WMSC. We're not really together anymore. We came out with a single called Ballad of a Nomad, but I'm currently working mostly with a band called Rust Belt Rejects. We've also performed at Chill on the Hill, and we have a lot of our music on the internet, YouTube, and SoundCloud and stuff.
Oh, nice. So do you get audience members beyond, say, Milwaukee and your friends and family by being online?
I think so. I mean, mostly it's in Milwaukee, but because, like, we tell a lot of our friends and people who see us in Milwaukee venues, but there have been people from other places who have listened to our stuff.
So you're only in ninth grade. You played in all these bands. You played in a lot of venues. You just described some of them there. Do you still have time for non-music stuff in your life? What do you do when you're not making music?
Yeah, totally. I sort of work on my schoolwork. I read. I, you know, watch TV, write, and just do things like that. But, you know, music is kind of my hobby that I'm going to keep with for the rest of my life.
So you think it's a hobby, or do you see this as being the thing that you do for the rest of your life?
I don't think it necessarily has to be the thing. I want to have some sort of backup plan. I want to go to college for something else. I'm not sure what, because I'm only a ninth grader, but I definitely, music is, if not a profession, it's definitely always going to be a hobby.
And what does your family think about you winning this award and wanting to take it forward?
They're all really supportive. You know, they've signed me up for all these lessons, and I just feel like I've had way too much support over the years to thank everyone individually.
Yeah. Well, Rob and I on the show are getting to the age where we need to know what the young people are listening to. You're someone who's obviously creating music and listening to music out there in ninth grade. Who should we be listening to? Who are some of your influences?
Well, my band has a lot of influences from psychedelic rock artists like Pink Floyd, and more recently,
I've heard of them,
like Tame Impala and
David Halla.
Tame Impala.
I don't know.
And Tame Impala. Yeah, and also I listen to a lot of blues music and classic rock and folk music.
So you're kind of going back to
I don't know. I used to be just a huge blues fan, but I'm in a jazz band at school also.
Uh-huh.
So I do a lot of jazz music, and I just feel like I've been all over the place. I need to figure out what my main genre is.
So I know as a performer, and I'm a musician, I went to school for music. I'm not doing it so much now, but I know that part of it is figuring out what you're going to be like on stage and what your style is when you're performing in front of people. Who do you look to when you want inspiration about what your stage act should look like?
I just sort of like follow whatever I think I can do to best express myself, and you know, get tips from my family and band members and figure out how to, you know, it's just like the best way that I can express how I feel to everyone, like what I've been working on for hours in my bedroom and in the basement with my band. You know, it's just a way to express myself.
So it doesn't sound like pressure to you. It sounds like it's fun. It sounds like it's self-expression.
Well, I mean, there is a lot of pressure, especially if I'm doing big shows and things like this, but but, like, most of the time, you know, the most important, like, if I'm not having fun, if I'm too stressed out, then there's no reason to do it. Because the most important part is to have fun and show what really matters to you and not what matters to other people.
Yeah.
You know, if other people don't like it, it doesn't matter. Just, like, play what you've been working on and what best describes you.
And do you have any thoughts about the Milwaukee music scene? Has it been a good place to kind of grow up?
It's a great place to grow up. I mean, just like I've been to so many, I've met so many musicians over the years at my school, and I've seen so many, there's so many great venues out there, and just, I mean, it couldn't be better.
Well, obviously you're just starting out in your career. You've done a lot already, but when you kind of think about your ultimate dream, where your music could take you. I know it's your hobby and you're going to also have another major in college, but what's your biggest dream about where your music could take you?
I just wanna come out with a lot of records and maybe build like a home studio where I can just like spend a long time creating my own sound and like maybe touring, something like that.
Great. Well, Joe, thank you so much, and we wish you well and good luck.
All right. Thank you for having me so much.
That was Jonah Roth, ninth grade student at Milwaukee Public Schools, Milwaukee High School of the Arts. He won the Rising Star Award from the Milwaukee Area Music Industry last month.
We're going to go out listening to a song that Jonah wrote for his former band. It's called Ballad of a Nomad. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. You're listening to Central Time, broadcasting today from the WPR studios in Milwaukee. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight after 7, it's the Moth Radio Hour. Tonight's storytellers include legendary novelist Walter Mosley. That's tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, a Latino civil rights organization called for an investigation into the iconic Leon's Frozen Custard Shop on Milwaukee's South Side.
The call for a federal investigation comes after a report from WISN-TV, Milwaukee's ABC affiliate. The report featured a customer who was fluent in Spanish and English and said that when he tried to place an order in Spanish, the employee said that she wasn't permitted to speak Spanish with him.
The owner of Leon's told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that he is, quote, trying to avoid customers getting used to Spanish and then one day finding no one here who can speak it. Now, since the story broke, the League of United Latin American Citizens has called it a clear violation of federal labor law and asked the U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission to look into the matter.
Joining us now is Enrique Figueroa. He's the director of the Roberto Hernandez Center at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and associate professor in the School of Urban Planning. Enrique, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. Good afternoon.
Well, for people outside the Milwaukee area, can you talk about this this frozen custard stand and the neighborhood it's in and the ethnic makeup of the area?
Well, I mean, it's in the south side of Milwaukee, and most people know that the south side nowadays is mostly a Latino neighborhood of the city of Milwaukee. I mean, before that, it was south side was primarily a Polish neighborhood, but most people identify the south side of Milwaukee as a Latino part of the city. So, and I suspect that there's customers and, in fact, employees of Leon's Custard that are Latinos.
Is it common in a neighborhood on the south side for businesses to speak the language of their customers, whether that's English or Spanish?
It's been my experience that is indeed the case. In fact, when I heard about this, I said, well, that's kind of from a business perspective. Business people want customers, not setting barriers for customers to be able to get access to their product or service. So I was really quite surprised.
And the idea here being not, I mean, there might be a business where no one speaks Spanish. That's one thing. But a business saying employees who even if you do speak Spanish, don't speak Spanish to your customers. What did you think when you heard about that?
Well, initially I thought it was kind of a joke. And then I said, well, this is, it is not a joke, but as I understand it, the owner's policy is that employees that are, you know, say Spanish-speaking and English-speaking can speak to themselves either in Spanish or English, but they cannot speak to customers in Spanish. I was really very surprised. I mean, to me, it's a devaluation of people that speak a language other than English, implicitly or explicitly. And two, by association, folks that have a culture associated with that particular language, it sends a signal to them, those folks, that we don't want your business. So to me, it's very perplexing, particularly because this is the irony. When I first came to interview here in Milwaukee back in 2001, a member of the search committee that hired me took me around the town, the city, the south side, obviously, and then took me to Leon's Custard as an iconic place in the south side. So this is actually very surprising, and I think it's a little an affront to folks that view this as a devaluation of either our language and our culture.
That said, this is something where customers can choose to go there or not based on this, but there's been this complaint now asking the U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission to take a look at this. What do you think of that? Is this something that merits a wider investigation at this local level?
You know, as I told your producer, I'm not an attorney, so I don't want to talk about the legal implications mm-hmm. of this. But it seems to me that it's a little odd, for example, if a person that walks up and speaks in Spanish to a bilingual employee, the employee understands that person what was ordered and serves that person, but cannot communicate with that person in said language. So that to me is a little odd, and also whether they can speak to each other as employees in Spanish and yet not to customers. I don't know whether some entity might deem that to be discriminatory. I don't know.
We're talking to Enrique Figueroa. He's with UW Milwaukee, the Roberto Hernandez Center there. He's also an associate professor in the School of Urban Planning. On a wider note, Enrique, you said that the south side of Milwaukee is more and more known as a neighborhood with a strong Latino presence. How has that community changed over years, and do you think Milwaukee, by and large, has been a welcoming place?
I think by and large it's probably been a welcoming place. I mean, the amount of growth that you've seen in the Latino community is substantial, not only within Milwaukee, but across the state. A lot of schools in the South Side have fairly large percentages of Latino kids, whether they're public schools, charter schools, or choice schools. So people are making their livelihoods in the South Side. A lot of Latino families are doing that. As you may know, the Greater Milwaukee Foundation just released a fairly significant study of the Latino demographics population in the four counties in southeastern Wisconsin. So it's growing and very significant population that will continue to grow and have a significant impact in our community.
For communities with an immigrant presence, the whole Latino community is not an immigrant community, but some of it is. Through American history, there have been disputes, conflicts over use of language, whether we're talking about the Polish community that lived in Milwaukee on the South Side in the past, sure. Others throughout history, and the Latino community now. How do you see that language issue playing out in Milwaukee now? Is there tension over it for the most part, or is this story we're talking about at a Custard Place kind of a unique story?
I am not aware of tensions arising because of language usage. I mean, I'm sure that there's some isolated cases in some workplaces, some other places. But no, this is kind of a fairly unusual thing for a business to have that kind of policy as far as I'm concerned.
And what have you been hearing from the community on social media since this story hit the news?
All kinds of stuff. I mean, people are calling for the boycott of Leon's. There's a picture that I just saw earlier this afternoon of a little kid with a mustache pushing around a little paletera cart, you know, those little carts that sell ice cream, and say, this is the place you should come and buy your custard now instead of Leon. So there's a good amount of rancor, I guess it would be an appropriate word for me to use, of why any business, particularly in the South Side, and particularly with the number of Latino employees that work there, would have such a policy. It's just not conducive to be a welcoming place as a good corporate citizen, for example.
Now, the business owner in this case says he was not saying this to his employees to create a hostile environment. But bigger picture, there's been a presidential campaign, Donald Trump, that's gotten a lot of backlash from Latino communities around the country with the way he's talked about immigrants from Mexico in particular. With that going on the national political landscape, do you hear on the local level these issues come up more?
I think the general tone that the Trump campaign has put forth as it applies to the Latino community is not a welcoming tone.
as the national polls indicate, the negative views by the Latino community of Mr. Trump are in the 80s, middle to low 80s percent have a negative viewpoint of Mr. Trump. So I think that that's probably playing some role. I mean, there is some raw nerves, perhaps, in some of the people in the community that say, look, you know, we don't want to be treated as second-class citizens. And I might add that a fairly small number of the total Latinos, whether it's here in Milwaukee or across the country, are immigrants. It's less than 20%, mm-hmm. and it's about similar number about the number of Latinos that are monolingual Spanish speakers is somewhere around 20% as well.
All right, Enrique, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Enrique Figueroa. He's director of the Roberto Hernandez Center at the UW-Milwaukee. He's an associate professor in the School of Urban Planning.
We're broadcasting today from WPR's Milwaukee studios. We're right downtown and within walking distance to Lake Michigan, or so they tell us. And I'm thinking we might get used to this. What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, it's really fun to be here. Although next time we want to come armed with some good suggestions about what to do on a day trip. And actually, next time it's a plan, we leave ourselves some actual free time to enjoy the city. Mm-hmm. So here's the deal. We want to hear from you right now. What do you enjoy doing in Milwaukee? Whether you're a local or you've been a tourist in Milwaukee or you used to live here, what's your favorite place to go, to eat, or to see a show? Call in now at 800-486-8655. That's our Milwaukee number, 800-486-8655. You can also share your to-do list, your Milwaukee must-see list, on the Central Time Facebook page.
Yeah, maybe you like a visit to the Milwaukee Art Museum or next door at the Children's Museum. And what about catching a Brewers game? Is that something you like that you would recommend? Well, let us know some of your favorite things to do in Milwaukee for the day, the weekend, or maybe just a long visit. That number again is 800-642. No, it's not. That's
nope.
The Madison number. That number is...
You did it. I'm glad I didn't do it.
...is 800. Old habits die hard. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Tell us about your love of the Cream City. Do you even call it the Cream City if you live here? We call it that in Madison, but I wonder
sometimes
if locals actually call it that or not. What would be on your roster of a really fabulous day in Milwaukee? Where would you eat? Where would you go to enjoy Lake Michigan? And hopefully you would be listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. What else would you do while you're here?
800-486-8655 is the number to call. And you know, I'm woefully underinformed. I've had some great meals in Milwaukee, but there's a lot out there I'm sure I haven't seen. I would love some great restaurant recommendations in Milwaukee and some great neighborhoods to walk in. 800-486-8655 is the number. We mentioned earlier the public market. I just went to that for the first time last year. A lot of fun. Had some great food there. Brought some great spices home. That was a great place to visit. Your favorite, Veronica?
Place to eat in Milwaukee?
Sure.
I do have a favorite, which a friend introduced me to who's in town a lot, and I love the restaurant La Miranda.
Yeah, you always
small
talk about
plates,
I'm sorry we didn't get there on this trip.
A lot of locally sourced ingredients, but I'm sure there's many, many, many more wonderful places to eat in Milwaukee, and we want to hear about them. The number 800-486-8655. And let's take our first caller now. We've got Barbara on the line in Wausau. Barbara, hi.
Hi.
What is your recommendation?
My favorite place, I no longer live in the Milwaukee area, but anytime I come back to Milwaukee or anytime I have introduced people to Milwaukee, my favorite place to take them is Cop's Custard because I think it's delicious.
I have very sentimental associations with that place. That's one place. It's a custard stand. My grandparents used to take me there when I was a kid, so I love that. Thank you for that.
Yeah, we've had a lot of soccer games. And by we, of course, I mean my kids, but I'm along for the ride or chauffeuring in the Milwaukee area. And yes, we often make it there for the only burger my wife will eat in the world. And if we have room, custard, that's the problem I have sometimes there is I eat too much burger and fries and no room left for custard.
Right. If memory serves, don't they have the big, really flat dinner plate size hamburgers?
Exactly. That's the one. Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, Barbara. Appreciate that. And we'll go next to Terry in Milwaukee. Terry, hi.
Hi. I would say if someone's visiting Milwaukee, on the top three of the list for me would be the Milwaukee Repertory Theater.
Ah, the Milwaukee Repertory.
Actors there are Broadway qualified and experienced, some of the best acting and performing I've ever seen in my life.
And Terry, what's maybe a favorite show you've seen at the Milwaukee Rep?
Well, Fences was just at the Rep now, and that was an outstanding performance. They're bringing in musicals and the performances that were Broadway hits, and they're performing them on a smaller stage. There's no bad seat at the Milwaukee Rep.
Terry, thank you so much for that. Yeah, we've interviewed people from the Milwaukee Rep and some projects they've done. Been a lot of fun. Got to get over here to see a show sometime.
Terry, thanks so much. And we'll go next to Denise joining us in La Crosse. Denise, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I live in La Crosse, and our favorite place to go is just a little bit north of Milwaukee to Whitefish Bay. Go to Pandel's Inn. It's a 100-year-old restaurant. It's a four-generation restaurant, and it's spectacular.
And it's called Pandel's?
Yep, P-A-N-D like David, L. Yep.
Okay, and what do you like to order there?
Oh, my gosh. Believe it or not, I love to order the chicken livers.
Chicken livers.
We're talking
so
deep fried, Denise?
Yeah.
It's been a while. I have had double fried chicken livers almost on a dare in my life when I was a kid. They're pretty good. They were not bad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what they do to make them special, but they're also known for their German pancakes.
Mm.
It is a German restaurant, so they're pretty spectacular.
Denise, thanks so much. I do love me some potato pancakes.
Sounds like a real insider tip. I like that. Thank you so much, Denise. And you can join us at 800-486-8655 as we get recommendations for what to do in Milwaukee. What do you love to do in Milwaukee? Maybe with your family, with your kids, maybe when you're out on the town on a date. Let us know. 800-486-8655.
And we'll go next to Terdu in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi.
Hi. My husband and I used to live in the Milwaukee area, and when we come, we love to go back to Sempazucci's on the east side for Mexican food.
Just got a thumbs up from Veronica there. What do you like to get there?
You know, just about anything we've had is good, so I'm not going to narrow anything down, but excellent margaritas and very authentic.
Is on Brady Street, right?
It is.
Right. On Brady Street, Sempazucci's. Yeah, that's a favorite, too. Thanks so much for that one. Appreciate it. And we'll go next to Jeff in New Berlin. Jeff, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How about you?
Outstanding.
What's your recommendation?
Well, two things. A great place to go, and I'm originally from the Detroit area, is the Milwaukee Public Museum. It's a phenomenal museum. A lot of people don't know how nice it is. And a great place to eat. I don't even know what it's called, but it's a little shack that serves wonderful gyros right up from the South Shore Yacht Club, right off the waterfront. It's a seasonal place, obviously. Really good.
Oh, that's great. So it's right on the waterfront, and it serves gyros.
Yummy.
Gyros and Greek food, souvlaki and things of that nature. Really good.
So if we wanted to find it, where did you say it was near again?
You just go to South Shore Yacht Club, right on the waterfront. Yeah. You can't miss it. It's a little trailer that's got a permanent awning out there, but it's only open seasonally.
South Shore Yacht Club. Excellent. Thank you so much for that. Appreciate it,
Jeff. That sounds great. Gyros on the waterfront. And the public museum. You know what? I haven't. They redid Streets of Old Milwaukee. I have not seen the updated version yet. So that's something I got to get off my checklist.
Yeah, that's always worth checking out. Jeff, thanks a lot for that. And we're going to go next to Anita in La Crosse. Anita, hi.
Hi.
What do you got for us?
One place you will want to eat in the Milwaukee area, not technically Milwaukee, which it's in West Allis, is Filippo's Italian Restaurant. It's on the corner of Beloit Road and 70th. Phenomenal. It's a wonderful pizza.
Excellent. Yeah, you can never have too many good pizza place recommendations.
Oh, no, and you can watch him make the crust and flip it up in the air. And, oh, it's wonderful. It's been there forever, and it's great. You have to try it.
Cool. Thank you so much for that.
We are taking your suggestions. Thanks for that, Anita. Your suggestions of things to do in Milwaukee, where we are right now. We're looking out at Milwaukee with these actual windows at our Milwaukee studio. Things to do in Milwaukee, things to eat in Milwaukee. Still time for you at 800-486-8655. We'll go next to Jake on the line in Milwaukee. Jake, hi.
I have two things to suggest. There's a great Vietnamese, Thai, a Hmong place called Mekong Cafe. It's off of North and 60th, and I believe Monday through Friday they have an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Ooh.
It's just, I think, some of the best Thai food in Milwaukee. I mean, some of the best Southeast Asian food, and of course, Estabrook Park Beer Garden is great too. So, and you
that sounds great. And Jake, that sounds great. I very rarely see a buffet at a Southeast Asian restaurant, Vietnamese, Thai, and Hmong, I think you said. There was one in Madison.
Yeah.
It's been gone for a lot of years. So a pretty good buffet set up there?
Oh, it is awesome. I mean, my wife and I go to it. I can't even count how many times a year we do, but it's really worth it. Very good. I'll check it out, definitely.
Jake, thanks so much. That sounds fantastic.
And we're going to go next to Cindy in Appleton. Hi, Cindy.
Hello. Well, when I come to Milwaukee, I love to do races. They have 5Ks, 10Ks, 1-milers, 2-milers, half marathons, marathons. They have a wonderful running community down there, and I love to run in Milwaukee.
I love it. Everyone else is eating, but you're exercising. So
you're burning those calories
eat later.
For us.
You eat later. Yeah. What do you like about running in Milwaukee?
Oh, just the scenery and the neighborhoods are all so different, and the old buildings, and I just love to run along the lake, and so.
Excellent.
Great neighborhoods.
A little bit of running advice there from Cindy, who says Milwaukee's a great running city.
All right. Well, thank you so much for all of your calls. A lot of great suggestions for things to do and things to eat in the Milwaukee area. You don't have to be done now, though. You can go over to the Central Time Facebook page. I'm assuming they're starting to stack up there now. And you can share your things. What should we do? Where should we eat next time we find ourselves in the Milwaukee area? We'll look for your suggestions on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is the way to go. The insider advice, the inside tips are
exactly.
always the best way to
thank
go.
You so
thank
much
you so much
that.
For that.